going to be a great day. I know it. What's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. I've got a really good Thursday show for you. Lots to get done. Love for you to be a part of it. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. It's going to be a good day and a good show because I'm going to go a lot of different ways with it. Ton of content and a lot of opportunities for you to get through. Hit me up right now, 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Yesterday, we had a Twitter submission from a clone, which led to an entire segment. That's really rare. You might run that back again. Hit me up on Twitter. I'm looking at you. I want to see what you want to talk about. At Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Coming up next segment, we are talking Tennessee Titans football again. Logan Ryan, a cornerback for the Titans, joins us. Also in hour number one, a senior writer for Sports Illustrated, Chris Mannix. Hour number two is open. And in hour number three, the president of the UFC, Dana White. So three really good interviews coming up. I dropped episode 107 of the Jim Rome podcast yesterday with Michael Lombardi, Hardcore NFL Pod. And I'll reset that for you too. Meantime, phone lines are open, 1-800-636-8686. I talked about this yesterday. I want to start the program by talking about it again right now. Remember how Laker fans were feeling it yesterday? Remember how we got into this? Remember how fired up they were after this went down in Denver?
On its way, does not go down. Oh, the Caruso! The final slam!
Remember that. Now, I'm not somebody to do the same show 2 days in a row. I would never do that. But remember how yesterday was just a bad day for Laker haters because they had to listen to Laker fans crack back on them over that rap that they had not played anybody, that they had not done anything, that they had this lame schedule strength. Remember that. Laker haters knew that they had something coming last night. They didn't like it yesterday, but they knew that Laker fan had something coming last night. Laker haters knew that the Lakers had to go back-to-back, Denver and then to Utah. So they were going to get their comeuppance at Utah. They were going to get theirs at Utah. Face it, Denver to Utah is a rough trip, especially the way the Jazz can defend. So Laker hater knew to stay down after the Lakers beat the Denver Nuggets because what could they say? But they also knew last night the Lakers were going to lie down. And then they could come right back up in here and snap flags off Laker fans' rig and talk all their junk. Because while the Lakers may have beaten the Nuggets, they were about to get locked up by the Jazz. Right? Excuse me, my bad. LA 121, Utah 96. A second game of the back-to-back beatdown. L.A. rolls into town. They hammer the Jazz. They take off their shoes. And they piss off the Jazz announcers, which I will get to in a minute. But let me say this once again. It is very tough to make a statement in December. To have a statement win in December. But going on the road to beat Denver and Utah on back-to-back nights is about as close to a statement as you're going to get. Strength of schedule. Try this. Try this 25-point blowout in Utah on for size. A game in which they were able to get a ton of rest as well. Neither LeBron nor AD played more than 29 minutes. And it was not just that they won, it was how they won. Pushing the pace on offense, which is crazy considering it is back-to-back. And here's the other thing about the Lakers that nobody thought was possible. The defense. I'll get to some of the highlights in a moment, but remember the defense. Remember when Frank Vogel came in and everybody clowned that decision and said that it made no sense whatsoever and it was the epitome of the dysfunctional Lakers. Who's clowning it now? Vogel is the Western Conference Coach of the Month. Vogel is the front runner for NBA Coach of the Year because he doesn't just have them playing defense. He's got them playing elite defense. And doing it with energy and aggression. The fact that everybody's locked in defensively and on the same page defensively this early is amazing. I mean, really a testament to Vogel as a coach. And yes, it does help when you've got Anthony Davis playing at a defensive player of the year level and doing things like this.
To the rim. Bogdanovic, fly by Davis. Then he comes back and deflects it. What a play by AD.
Spectrum Sportsnet. That's not really fair. A big is not supposed to be able to close out like that, fly by like that, and then recover like that. This guy will guard whoever you have, and there's a really good chance he will shut them down. Ask Denver. Now you can ask Utah. And if we're talking about AD as the DPOY, you may as well just consider him for the MVP as well, because he's also doing things like this.
Good pass to Davis, who throws it down with one hand, assist to LeBron.
Things like that and things like this.
AD drives, spins to the rim, and dunks it. Wow. A major league move by Anthony Davis.
That was nice.
Split the double team with a spin move, dunk on a third guy. 60% of the Utah players on the court had a chance to stop that guy, and none of them could. No wonder Rajon Rondo is saying stuff like, I got him as MVP and Defensive Player of the Year, so if he only gets one, I'll be pissed. End quote. Same, R2. Same. And don't sleep on the work that LeBron is doing either. He went for 20 points, 12 assists, and the best travel ever. Yes, Laker haters. That is about the only thing that you can hang your hat on after last night. That LeBron took, like, I don't know, 4 or 10 steps and didn't get called for it. But then again, he's about as shocked as you are that that happened and that there was no call.
Yeah, it was the worst thing I ever, probably one of the worst things I've ever done in my career. I didn't even realize I did it until halftime, to be honest. One of my coaches showed me. I didn't even realize I did it. I think at the same time, I was watching the underneath play and KCP and Donovan got into it. KCP started to run, and then Donovan bumped into him. He fell on the ground, and I think I was ready to pass the ball, and my brain just kind of just, I just had a malfunction. I really had a malfunction. So, you know, I felt bad for the refs on that one because, you know, they'd probably get a write-up on that one. That was pretty bad.
It's pretty hilarious how much time he takes to break that down. It's like the ball was inbounded to him, and then he just walked it up the floor. And when I say walk it up the floor, I don't mean like dribbled it up the floor. I mean like he carried the ball up the floor. Took about 30 steps. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm supposed to dribble. It was that bad, but that hilarious. Almost as hilarious is what happened near the end of the game with LeBron. But again, before we get to that, one more highlight. Because that's what this Lakers team is. It's a highlight factory. You had Alex Caruso, the bald mamba, doing this in Denver Tuesday night.
On its way, does not go down. Oh, the Caruso!
That was awesome, but I'm not sure it was as good as this. This being Dwight Howard doing this to Utah last night.
Dwight's going to shoot a three.
It's on its way, and down it goes! Dwight Howard, that's his 7th 3 in his career!
It was nothing but net, too. Splash!
Look at Boogie.
Can I tell you something? That's not just Dwight Howard shooting a three. That's not just Dwight Howard hitting a three. That's Dwight Howard hitting a jab step three, which is elite and unreal. And the continued transformation of Dwight Howard over the past few months is still one of the most stunning things I have ever seen in my life. But if you want to talk about stunning things, the Utah Jazz announcers damn near lost their minds when Kyle Kuzma had back-to-back blocks and LeBron started to celebrate.
Big fella turns in a crowd, continues to fight, blocked again.
Look at LeBron, he's on the court
with no shoes, mind you.
What is going on here?
That's some disrespect right there. Please. This isn't playground ball.
I mean, they are clowning right now on that bench side.
Right. They are. You hear that? You would have thought that LeBron had come onto their court and stomped all over the Utah logo. Or that LeBron went onto their court and went Randy Moss moon with it.
Moss! Randy Moss is in for a touchdown!
Randy Moss, without even really being able to run, as he shoots the moon to the fans here in Green Bay.
That is a disgusting act by Randy Moss. And it's unfortunate that we had that on our air live. That is disgusting by Randy Moss.
Like, that is a disgusting act by LeBron James. And it is unfortunate that we had that on our air live. That is disgusting by LeBron James. Wait, so your beef is what? Your beef is that he's not wearing shoes? Like, what kind of a weird issue is that? He's disrespecting the game with that? Get out of here with that. Hey, yo, fellas, he took off his shoes and he gave them to some kids. Shouldn't he be applauding that gesture instead of killing him for it? Man, those dudes were worked up. I thought the Jazz broadcasters were going to go Lamar Thomas on that. I thought they were going to go down the elevator and get in that thing.
Now that's what I'm talking about. You come into our house, you should get your behind kicked. You don't come in the OB playing that stuff. You're across the ocean over there. You're across the city. You can't come over to our place talking noise like that. You get your butt beat. I was about to go down the elevator and get in that thing.
I was about to go down the elevator and get in that thing. I haven't heard a broadcaster that bent out of shape over anything insignificant since Mike Patrick was getting all worked up over Britney Spears.
I have an important question.
Go ahead.
What is Britney doing with her life?
Who?
Britney.
Britney who?
Spears. What is she doing with her career?
Why do we care at this point? Is she here?
I don't think so. Georgia from the 25.
Yo, fellas, it's a game, and a game your team was losing by 20 at that point. So if you want to be pissed about anything, be pissed about that, because LeBron did not disrespect you or the game or your fans. In fact, he hooked up a young fan. Go ask that kid if he felt disrespected or if that gift made his life. And will be something that they always remember. You can't kill the Lakers for not having played or beaten anybody who matters after they went back-to-back on Denver and Utah on the road. So you've got to come running in to crack them for something else. To crack on LeBron for disrespecting the game. Get the hell out of here with that. The guy looks great. The Lakers look great. The more noise you make, the worse you look. They just won back-to-back games on the road against a pair of teams that you probably had ahead of them before the season. They've got a winning record against teams with winning records. They've got the Coach of the Year candidate. They've got the Defensive Player of the Year candidate. And they've got LeBron and Caruso and Dwight. Y'all buried them before the season, and you can't come off that point. It's okay to admit that you were wrong, just like it's fine for people to admit that they might have been wrong when they said Melo would bomb in Portland. Because the more you stick to it, the worse you look. To quote that Jazz announcer, there is some disrespect right there.
That's some disrespect right there.
19-3, y'all. 19-3. Yeah, LeBron's aged out. Vogel is warming Jason Kidd's seat. They can't defend anybody. Idiots.
That is a disgusting act.
That is a disgusting take. 1-800-636-8686. Back-to-back days. Lakers right off the top. Bears, Cowboys tonight. I've got a preview of that for you. USC. Let's keep it here in L.A. USC fan, not happy today. They ratioed the rehire of Clay Helton. I've got that for you, too. I'm going to go back-to-back, though. When we come back, Logan Ryan, Titans cornerback. Chris Mannix after that. Second hour is open. Dana White in hour number three. Phone lines open. 1-800-636-8686. All right, so we've all heard of Casper. You know, the sleep company with the outrageously comfortable products at not-so-outrageous prices. From award-winning mattresses to pillows, sheets, and duvets, Casper transforms the way we sleep one snooze at a time. You haven't tried them yet? Then it's time to treat yourself to better sleep during their extended Black Friday Cyber Monday sale. The Casper mattress is an award-winning balance of comfort and support because it is designed with four layers of premium foam for all-night pressure relief. The Zone Support keeps your back aligned and cradles you with extra support. Casper is the perfect place to get all your holiday shopping done because, let's be honest, everybody sleeps every single night. And as always, Casper has got free shipping and free returns, so treat yourself with 10% off any purchase with a mattress now at Casper.com. Use code Mondays. Casper.com, code Mondays. and get 10% off any purchase with a mattress today. Terms and conditions do apply. See Casper.com/terms.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Busy first hour. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. All right. As promised, we are joined right now by a cornerback for the Tennessee Titans, a two-time Super Bowl champ. 9 tackles, 1 tackle for a loss, 1 pass defensed, and an INT in Sunday's win over Indianapolis. On the season, 89 tackles, 3.5 sacks, 18 passes defensed, 4 INTs, 3 forced fumbles. He was an All-American at Rutgers. He was the 83rd pick overall back in 2013. Tennessee, 7-5, second in the AFC South. They're at Oakland Sunday. That is a CBS game. Logan Ryan is my guest. Logan, good to have you on. How are you?
What's going on, Jim? Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Good. Great to have you. All right, so let me ask you about Sunday's game. You guys had heard all the noise, Logan, about the fact that this organization had won only one game in Indianapolis since they had built that new stadium. So what was your mindset going into that game?
I don't really think we cared. You know, a lot of these players nowadays are younger to this league, newer players, or I'm somebody who's only been here 3 years. I'm 2-1 in that stadium. So it really had nothing to say about that. I know it's quiet. We call it church on Sunday there because the crowd's really quiet. That's how Peyton Manning used to like it. But, you know, we're taking on Jacoby Brissett and the Colts, and they were banged up, and we actually had a lot of injuries too, and it was just a battle. And we got a lot of respect for their organization. I think Frank Reich is a really good coach. I think he's one of the best in the NFL. They have great scheme, and they have a good offensive line. They run the ball, and they play physical and play hard. But we run the ball, we play physical and play hard, too. So it was strength on strength.
Logan Ryan joining us. All right, so a couple of moments from that game that I want to hit on. Like, when you came off the edge and you drilled Jacoby Brissett as he got the ball off, you were mic'd up in the game, and you said, "That one hurt, that one hurt. I know it hurt you," end quote. I love how you were talking in the game because you frequently were just planting ideas in your opponent's heads. You know, like, that one hurt, or you're going to fumble. What's your strategy when it comes to that, and how do guys respond when you're talking to them like that?
You know, I completely forget that I'm mic'd up, and I say a lot more stuff than that. That's just the stuff that makes it on air.
Right.
So people are surprised because they see me off the field, and I'm very, you know, I love the animal rescue, philanthropy, and pretty much all around. Solid guy, married, family man, but you know, on the field, I'm trying to win. And Jacoby was a teammate of mine in New England for some years, so I'd known him since his first year coming in. And he was a scout team quarterback, and you know, he was going against our defense every day. So there's a lot of trash talk between the two. And there, you know, I'm really proud of him. I'm proud of the way he's doing in Indy. But I know when I hurt Jacoby, and that one hurt him. I hit him right in his. I felt the wind get out of him, so I let him know it. It hurts, and I tell the running backs all the time, you're going to fumble. I tell the receivers, you can't get open. You know, it's talking me up. It's putting doubt in their head, whatever it's doing. But I know when I'm talking like that, I'm on top of my game.
We're talking to Logan Ryan. All right, so then the score is tied at 17 going into the fourth. There's that blocked field goal return for a TD that gave you a 24-17 lead. And then 2 plays after that, you picked off your former teammate. Take me through that play. What did you see on that play, and how good did it feel to get that huge turnover?
It felt great. You know, I've been around the ball a lot this year and been working really hard and put a lot of work in this year, working on the jug machines, catching the ball, doing a whole bunch of extra stuff that, you know, only I know. And, you know, we were in a defense that was a zone that looked like man, and I kind of saw Pascal kind of running down the field on our backer, and I kind of knew that that's the matchup Jacoby wanted. Jacoby's a really smart quarterback, but I kind of know what he likes and what he wants. I knew he was going there, and our linebacker, Rashawn Evans, did a great job of making the ball sail a little bit, and I was on the spot, just trusting my instincts and going with it. It was a great call, and it was a great play by Rashawn and our pass rush. So, you know, it's a team sport, and all these plays are made by the team. It's not just me out there, so a lot of credit goes to Rashawn and the team on that one.
Logan Ryan joining us. Listen, we may not know exactly what you're doing and all the work you're putting in, but it's pretty clear to anybody who watches you play that you like to hit, and you like to hit hard. The rap has always been the corner shy away from contact. What is your approach to hitting guys the way you do and your physical style of play?
I want to win, man. And ever since you played football when you were little, my dad was my defensive coordinator when I was 6 years old. He said, just go tackle the guy with the ball. So I don't really believe in corners, you know, not throwing their stuff in there or not trying to avoid tackles or trying to, you know, preserve themselves, whatever you want to call it, it's football. And I feel like if you tackle right, tackle the correct way, it's safe. And I'm going to do whatever it takes to help my team win. And the league's changing. We see all these spread offenses. We see all these RPOs. We see all this college stuff coming to the games, faster players, more versatile players. Well, defenses are changing as well. And I think I'm one of the guys that's helping that. And do I play nickel? Do I play safety? Do I play corner? You know, I'm making plays at deep half. I'm blitzing a lot. I'm making a lot of tackles. And then, so I really just feel like the football is changing, and I'm one of those players that the team's putting some stuff on my plate that's different from week to week. And all I can do is study it and try to make plays for the team and do whatever it's asked. And guys like Charles Woodson and Rondae Barber and guys like that are some of my favorite players. Some of the best DBs to play, and those are guys I model my game after.
Well, and on top of that, you're getting a lot of attention because of your play, because of the numbers you're putting up. I know you're focused on team goals, but what does it mean to you that people want to see you in the Pro Bowl and are talking about that possibility?
You know, it's a great honor. It would be a great honor. I haven't had one. There was years where people said I should have, but I really didn't matter. You know, the Pro Bowl would mean a lot just for my family. I have two young kids. I take them to Disney and have that moment with them. I mean, I take them to Disney all the time. I just pay for it, so on the house would be great. But, you know, that stuff's really more for my family to get excited. I know that if I'm playing hard and if I'm in good shape and playing the right way, that the numbers and all that stuff will come. I can't control it. I just want to help my team win games, and all that stuff will you know, take control in the end. So I'll be honored for my family and everything like that, and I'm proud that the fans and the football fans are watching me and, you know, like my game. But, you know, I go out there. I really don't chase the numbers, man. I go out there and just try to do whatever it takes to win.
Logan Ryan joining me for another few moments. You know, you mentioned this off the top, and I was going to get to it no matter what. But as some people know, you founded the Ryan Animal Rescue Foundation, and it's a cause that is really close to your heart and very important to you. How did you first get involved in animal welfare issues?
My wife, my girlfriend at the time, she was my college sweetheart. When I got up to New England in 2013, you know, I was playing and I was working a lot, and she was a former college athlete, and she was trying to transition and bounce around a couple of jobs trying to figure out what she did and wanted to do. And she said, I'm just going to go work at an animal shelter. And she started working at an animal shelter for minimum wage. And nobody knew that, you know, she was dating an NFL player. That's not how she is. And she was sweeping kennels and picking up after dogs and walking them like a lot of people do, and with a huge heart. And I started to go visit on my off days and started seeing these animals and seeing the issues. And I said, man, I got to use my platform and my awareness to do something about it. So I started taking pictures with some of those dogs who were there, and cats and kittens, and on the 26th of every month, and getting them adopted. And it was called the Ryan Monthly Rescue, just featuring some of these animals on my Instagram. And that grew and blossomed into a full 501c3 nonprofit that's been running for up to about 3 years now, and raised well over $100,000, donated well over $100,000 of my own money. And we do a lot to raise awareness, provide grants, education, programs to help shelters, help volunteers, and help these animals, help them get adopted, help them find homes, pay for spay and vaccine clinics. So we do all types of stuff, but it's close to my heart because my wife and I, we have three rescue animals. She worked in the shelter, and it's something that I feel like I could be a voice of the voiceless. And obviously my cause, my cleats is coming up. I'll be wearing them week 15, and I'll have some bright neon cleats and auction them off for my charity to help these shelter animals get adopted.
That is so great. There's got to be so much pride in that. So before you go, you mentioned three rescue animals. We have a rescue cat that's absolutely amazing. What are your three rescue animals?
So I have a dog that me and my wife got in college, a puggle named Nala. I have a big blue pitty, as intimidating and as big and large head as ever, and the sweetest guy in the world, my kid's favorite, named Leonardo, named after the Blue Ninja Turtle. And then we just rescued a blind senior pity about 2 years ago. His name's Julius. He's 11 years old, completely blind, no eyes. So we have one that's, you know, they're all special in their own right. He's super special because of that. And then my four-year-old daughter is getting into fostering some kittens. So we've been bringing some foster kittens in there that she's been help feeding and learning responsibility, and giving them back when they're ready to get adopted. So we got all types of animals in my house. All rescues, I believe that everybody's animals in a shelter looking for a second chance, looking for a forever home. And I have two young kids, and and they're learning how to have a great heart because of these animals.
That is so great. He is a two-time Super Bowl champ, an All-American out of Rutgers. Tennessee is 7-5. They're second in the AFC South. Another big one on Sunday against Oakland. Logan Ryan. Dude, I don't know how you and I did not do this sooner. It was so good to have you on the show, Logan. I really appreciate you. Great job.
Appreciate it, Jim. Thank you.
That was great. Really appreciate that conversation. Logan Ryan. Well, part of the reason is he was a Patriot, and the Patriots are not easy to get to. But that's a really good player and a tremendous guy. What great presence. Logan Ryan and the Titans were left for dead earlier this season. Remember, they were 2-4. Maybe nobody gave up inside that locker room, but outside of it, a lot of people had a lot of concerns and a lot of questions. Now they're 7-5. They not only have a look at the wild card, they've got to look at that division still yet. And Ryan Tannehill has been unbelievable since he got the opportunity. So my thanks to the Titans and Logan Ryan. When we come back, Chris Mannix joins us. So we'll go back to back. Also, coming up in hour number three, Dana White back in the jungle. Time now for your bottom of the hour sports update. Here is the latest on this busy Thursday. Andrew Bogish.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I'm still kind of blown away by that conversation we just had with Logan Ryan. Get the feeling that when that guy's done playing, he can pretty much step off the field and do whatever he wants. Really smart, really comfortable, extremely engaging. All right, I mentioned we would go back-to-back in hour number one, and that's exactly what we're going to do. We are joined right now by an NBA writer for Sports Illustrated, an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, a boxing analyst for DAZN, host of the Crossover Podcast and SI Boxing with Chris Mannix. We are talking Ruiz versus Joshua 2, Saturday, 3:45 p.m. Eastern on DAZN. Good friend of the program, Chris Mannix is my guest. Chris, what's up? How are you?
How do you follow the athlete, Jim, that's extremely comfortable and good on the air? That's a tough act to follow, man.
Yeah, but you are an extremely comfortable broadcaster, writer, and podcaster, also on the air. And when you're done playing, you're going to walk off and do whatever you want, so you can do it. I got you. Listen, Chris, you're on the call for Ruiz Joshua 2 on Saturday. Before we get to the fight, which I love, exactly where in the world are you right now, and what is the scene like?
I am in my hotel room in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. It's the location that was chosen by Anthony Joshua, who had pretty much total control over where the rematch would be by virtue of the initial contract. Saudi Arabia stepped up and made an offer north of $50 million, 50 million dollars to host this fight. And, you know, Anthony Joshua followed the money. What Saudi has done in the last 2 months has quite literally built a stadium, a 15 to 20,000 seat stadium, for this fight to take place. It's open air. The temperature is in the low to mid 70s right now in Saudi Arabia. I can't speak too much about the atmosphere. I think a lot of people are going to be coming in on visas on fight night. They expect about 4,000 to 5,000 British fans to be in attendance, but it certainly is a fascinating place to hold a big fight. And I think, no question, the biggest fight that we've ever seen in this region.
We're talking to Chris Mannix. Now, you and I spoke after the first fight. When you look back on that fight, Chris, what were your expectations for the fight going into it?
Oh, I thought that Joshua would just steamroll Andy Ruiz. I mean, Ruiz has been a good fighter throughout his career, but in his toughest test to date, he lost to Joseph Parker. It was a close fight, but he lost. He took that fight effectively on 5-6 weeks' notice. I didn't think he'd be too significant a threat, but Andy Ruiz showed a lot in that fight. And I think more than anything, Anthony Joshua showed weaknesses. I think he didn't buy Vladimir Klitschko in their fight in 2017. No shame there. Vladimir Klitschko is a terrific puncher, But he was also buckled early on in the fight against Alexander Povetkin. He's been hit, you know, pretty regularly. Doesn't fight like a traditional big man in the mold of a Lennox Lewis or a Vladimir Klitschko. So he's not, you know, he's not perfect out there in the ring. And Andy Ruiz exposed a lot of that. And I think a lot of people are wondering what kind of adjustments Anthony Joshua is going to make.
We're talking to Chris Mannix. So really quickly then, when you look back on that right now, does that fight feel even more incredible, or does it feel like, you know what, it actually makes some sense?
You know, I guess it makes more sense in hindsight. And I've spent a lot of time in the last few months talking to, you know, more people that have been around Andy Ruiz, not just his training staff, but, you know, people in his former promoter, Top Rank. I mean, they had him for a number of years, got him right out of the amateur ranks. And Andy Ruiz is a guy that has a pretty good amateur background. He only has that one loss. You know, Top Rank parted ways with him, not because they didn't believe in his talent, but because they didn't think he would ever take boxing as seriously as he needed to, as it needed to be. So in hindsight, you can certainly see that Andy Ruiz was more viable than he initially was given credit for.
Chris Mannix is joining us. Now, you recently went to England and you sat down with Joshua. It's one thing to lose, but Joshua told you, quote, "I just had to deal with the pain and the issues of taking a loss against what people called a fat guy," end quote. How much do you think that Ruiz's physical appearance added to the pain of that loss?
Oh, I think it absolutely did. Look, fighters have different mentalities than media members. They know that appearances can be deceiving. And Anthony Joshua didn't go into that fight thinking Ruiz was, you know, the equivalent of a modern-day Butterbean. Like, he knew he was a real fighter. But I don't think that he took him as seriously as maybe he would have taken Jarrell Miller, the original opponent who had to back out after testing positive for banned substances less than 2 months before that fight. So I do think that Anthony Joshua saw Ruiz and saw a softer target in Ruiz, and the fact that he lost to him and has had to take such heated criticism. I mean, I wrote in the magazine this week, Jim, that, you know, like, Anthony Joshua is the first fighter, and certainly the first heavyweight, to lose in the Twitter age. So not only did he lose to a guy that was viewed at as inferior in the same way that Mike Tyson did and Lennox Lewis did, but he had to deal with the barbs. And Anthony Joshua is a huge social media presence. He's got millions of followers on Instagram, on Twitter, on YouTube. I mean, he's everywhere on social media. So he not only had to deal with the loss, but every day, if you ever logged on to his accounts, having people say just a lot of stuff about him. And I think that stuck with him as well.
Chris Mannix is joining us. So, Chris, in the aftermath of that fight, there were so many different theories and attempts to explain what happened to Joshua. Like, he just wasn't focused, he's overrated, he even had a panic attack. What do you make of all those theories?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that. I don't believe he had a panic attack. I've spoken to a number of people about that, and that seems like it's more just sort of internet-driven gossip. Is he overrated? I don't really believe that either, because prior to this, it wasn't like he was a guy that was a paper champion. I mean, he had wins over the likes of Dillian White, of course, Vladimir Klitschko. Joseph Parker was an undefeated champion when he faced Joshua, so he had some significant wins leading into that fight. I just think he had a really bad night, and could that night be duplicated? I mean, Joshua said to me, you know, maybe it's possible that Ruiz has his number. I think that's possible, but I think it's equally possible, if not more likely, that this fight, the first fight, goes down just like, you know, Lewis versus Rahman. Remember, in that fight back in 2001, Lewis avenged that loss just months later in a spectacular knockout. Vladimir Klitschko himself lost to a guy named Lehman Brewster, was knocked out, and a year or so later, he beat Brewster in a rematch, knocking him out. So I think that history shows that a guy can have a bad night and rebound spectacularly. And there are a lot of people around Anthony Joshua that firmly believe that's going
to
happen.
We're talking to Chris Mannix. There is a history of guys pulling off stunning upsets in boxing and then not winning that rematch. Now, you were with Ruiz in the fighter meetings about 24 hours ago. He was there rocking a Knicks jersey. What was your sense of his mindset and his mood right now?
I mean, it's funny, Jim. Like, Andy Ruiz, even though he's got the titles, still looks like that kind of fan off the street that pays money to take a picture with the heavyweight champion. I mean, seeing them at the press conference, I mean, Ruiz has got that, you know, big Derrick Rose jersey that he bought on the day of the first fight, and he wore it to the post-fight press conference. He doesn't look like a real fighter, certainly not standing next to the Greek god that is Anthony Joshua, but clearly he is. Now, you asked about the mindset. I think it's a good question, and I don't think it's one we can fully answer until after the fight. I have my doubts that he's as sort of hungry for this fight as he was for the first one. As I mentioned, talking to his former promoter, one thing that comes back to me a lot is that time has never been the friend of Andy Ruiz. When he's been active, he's been able to stay sharp, stay relatively in shape, stay focused. But when he takes time off, has longer layoffs, that tends to be problematic for him. It tends to keep him out of the gym and less focused. So right now, they're saying all the right things. He talked to his trainer, Manny Robles, says he's been in training camp for like 3 months. Doc Andy, he's just as hungry, just as focused as the last time. But he's been celebrated in his hometown. He's been built up and praised like never before. He came into the fighter meetings wearing like clearly new jewelry, new ring, new necklace. He probably had $100,000 around his neck and on his fingers, going into that meeting. So I do wonder if, all the trappings of success may have cost him a little bit of something. And if it did, that could significantly change the fight.
We're going to find out this weekend. All right, before I let you go, I've got to hit you with a quick basketball question. You recently weighed in on whether James Harden is the best scorer in NBA history. How do you go about answering that question, Chris?
It's so subjective. And, look, do I believe that Michael Jordan, if you dropped him into today's game with today's rules, where you can't manhandle him like, the Pistons and the Knicks and all those teams did back in the 1990s, I think he'd be putting up James Harden-like numbers. But the fact is, we can't do that. We can't just put Jordan in today's game. In today's game, in today's rules, James Harden is the most unstoppable offensive player that I've ever seen. He's incredible with his body control. He's incredible with the three-point shot. And he does things. One of the reasons I tilt towards yes with this answer is that he does things oftentimes with the entirety of an opposing defense aimed at him. I mean, you talk to rival coaches, especially the last couple of years when Harden hasn't had as much offensive support as maybe he has this year with Russell Westbrook. They just gear their entire defense toward him. He's looking at one guy. He's got two guys behind that guy designed there to stop him from dribble penetration, and he still gets to the hole, and he still makes plays. And that, to me, is nothing short of remarkable. So I think he has a very strong argument to be called the greatest scorer in NBA history.
All right, so quickly, in today's game, with today's rules, if you're a defense, how do you go about trying to stop him or at least limiting his impact?
I wish I knew. I mean, he's so comfortable from three. When he gets to the basket, the way he uses that body and extends his arms, he's almost guaranteed to get to the free throw line. He's averaging 14 free throws per game this year, Jim. It's incredible. That's a career high for James Harden. I just think you have to try to force him into a mid-range game. And because the mid-range shot, as we know, the least efficient shot in basketball, if you can force him to long twos, great. He's probably still going to make them, but that's the best you can do.
Once again, Ruiz, Joshua 2, Saturday, 3:45 p.m. Eastern on DAZN. He's an NBA writer for SI, an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, and a boxing analyst for DAZN, and hosts a couple of podcasts as well. Chris Mannix, my guest. Chris, great job. You see, I knew there was no issue with you following a guy who's comfortable, who can walk off the field and do whatever he wants when he's done. Great job, Chris. Have a great weekend.
You got it, Jim. Thanks.
My man, Chris Mannix. All right, so you've got the rematch. Ruiz, Joshua 2. It's so true. If you look at these two guys standing next to each other, they could not look any more different. And if you're Joshua, one thing to lose, but to lose to, quote, a fat guy, whether that's legit or not. I mean, Ruiz is not exactly a Greek god, but he is skilled and he is dangerous. And to me, once again, I've said this before about boxing. There is no such thing as a lucky punch in boxing. There's just not. If you land it, you deserve it. You get credit for it. No such thing as a lucky punch. So you don't want to indict somebody on how they look. But if you look at these guys standing next to each other, they could not look any more different than they do. And in Joshua, if you've got a guy who's got a really, really strong social presence, and he's active, and he's got followers, and he not only lost, not only was shocked, but, quote, lost to a fat guy, of course that made it worse.
Fat?
Like, you made it worse, Alvin. I'm trying to make a point here. 1-800-636-8686. Every time Alvin hears the word fat, he just fires that thing. Fat!
Fat!
He lost to a fat guy. Fat! Fat!
Fat!
Second hour is open. Bears-Cowboys tonight. I want to get into that and more. Stay tuned.